makes computers seem easy, but that pocket protector says otherwise. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
I'm going to give you the lineup of all of the different things we're going to be talking about on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Keith M. Cedar is going to be continuing his backup series, Apple's Exit from Wireless and Time Capsule. Marty's going to be talking about the Brightline Lighting Zello Prosumer Lights. Steve Kesky about DARPA and their prosthetics program. I've got a couple of items. I really believe we need to continue to drive towards space, to Mars, and more. Retrofitting cars without Apple CarPlay or Android Auto is something that one of the major manufacturers is fighting against. I'm going to, on the IT Pro series, cover just one more segment in regards to rebutting common statements about why return to work is so important. And we do have a new scam, the tax refund scam. Got some listener questions as well. Derek, work is installing many different software packages and I'm overwhelmed. Cindy, are smart home devices vulnerable to hackers? All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. If you miss any of that, you're interested in hearing more, the podcast is available at the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. Of course, you can reach out to us with your computer questions, your technology concerns. You can do that there at the website, or you can phone me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-637-3888. Let's dive into the news from the past week, and even more proof is coming out that screen time before bedtime is a bad idea. The Journal of the American Medical Association published a new study that tracked 122,000 people over 2 years across the board. They found out what we had suspected, that people who were exposed to screens before heading to bed had a 33% higher amount of poor sleep quality. They also reported sleep was pushed back by 19 to 20 minutes on all days. We're talking weekdays and weekends, which made things worse. A little self-control may be hard, so there are tools in both the Android operating system as well as in iOS, the Apple operating system, to encourage better sleep habits. But it's up to you. It's up to me. It's up to all of us to leverage these. It is, however, up to you to realize that this is a problem and to take that same action that is needed. The blue screen of death. Every Windows user has likely experienced this legendary nightmare as it's been around since Windows 1. Yeah, we're going back 40 years now. We're going back to 1985, and Microsoft has shifted up this whole idea in the next release of Windows 11. It's technically called 24H2, so it's going to be black, not blue. All right, it's a little less ominous, but so have the more recent experiences when encountering this crash, including this little frowny face and a QR code. It's been made a little bit more friendly, a little bit more approachable, and yet continues to contain about as little information as it ever has. I want the crash screen to give me something. I want something other than a random error code that reads 0x12345 or whatever it is. Tell me what you think is wrong in plain English and take me with you on the process towards repair. Is that really too much to ask for? I mean, we've been asking for that exact same thing since, well, a long time ago. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has been looking into Chinese companies which are operating against the existing bans. We've already discussed over the course of the years Huawei, ZTE, and other companies that have been barred from doing business here in the United States due to their potential to be used for nefarious purposes against us, against the United States. This new effort, this review, this audit, whatever you want to call it, is going to move forward to research if those requirements were somehow circumnavigated by following the loopholes, using other shell corporations and the like to continue their spying efforts. The good news is that most of those smaller names that might be coming up as threats are unlikely to have grown large enough for most of us to be concerned. Hewlett-Packard has revealed a plan that's actually already in place. It's moving forward, and they're working on adjusting their supply chain and how they provide us with computers. The exciting news here is that they're working to move their production back onshore. Yes, here into the United States. Part of this is to ensure no backlash from tariffs, but more about having stock, our PCs and all of the other hardware that they have, where it's needed and when it's needed. This effort is already working on delivering new products to us faster, which is going to, in return, actually drive customer satisfaction. Yes, it's going to make us happier. This plan has been in place for about a couple of years. They just talked about it this last week. They've been expanding the plants in the United States and actually also, really cool, in other markets around the world that are close to their target consumers. We're talking about one of them was in Thailand and one of them was in Mexico. So they're really working to kind of fix a lot of the supply chain issues in a lot of different locations. So this could be very interesting to follow. The Apple Card relationship with Goldman Sachs has been sour for a while. How long? Well, they started this up. The Apple Card was started up in 2019, and Goldman Sachs was doing a really poor job of responding to customers, of getting refunds given to them and things like that. So a while back, I think it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, they both announced they were looking to dissolve this partnership that had been going for quite a while. Goldman Sachs has been the name on the back of the card. They've been doing all of the handling of everything that goes on with the Apple Card. This week, news came out that a lot of people are looking to jump into this. Visa, American Express, they're both jumping into the mix. And MasterCard, who actually provides the payment card services to Goldman Sachs, they're all looking to bid on this. MasterCard, of course, looking to keep the business going and hopefully through a different front-end representative. They don't normally issue cards directly. The banks issue the cards, so they're going to have to find a partner there to come up with the right offer. Visa has already made an offer of $100 million up front, and this is nothing to sneeze at, but it pales in comparison to the $20 billion in balances that they would gain from taking over that business. So we've known this would be coming, and it's going to be very interesting to see who's going to win that titanium Apple Card and all of that business. It's going to be something we're going to be tracking here at Computer Talk Radio, and we've been tracking this all the way along. I am going to admit I do have an Apple Card. I only have a couple of cards and I keep very low balances on all of them, but it's good to have around. They do have a lot of deposits as well through Goldman Sachs, and people are depositing their money into a savings account, which actually does return a nice amount of interest, although that keeps dwindling down. Right now, this last week, I was advised it was down to 3.75%. Google is moving on from some of their older products, and we can expect this. Some of these different products are going to be deprecated. They're going to be sent off to the waste bin. But the interesting thing here with Google is they've worked with other companies for the replacements. So they're saying, hey, we're taking these away, but hey, we've got these products already. 10 years ago, the Nest Protect product was released, and 7 years ago, the Nest Yale Lock. For the first one, they went to one of the leaders in smoke detectors, First Alert. You've probably heard of them. They make smoke detectors. They make fire extinguishers. This is really a smart move. But the lock actually was even better. Yale One of the finer lock companies out there was already cross-branded, but now they're shifting off from the Nest Yale lock to just the Yale Smart Lock with Matter. And that's kind of returning back to the original full name, the namesake of the Yale lock. Now, since it comes with Matter, this is interesting. It also brings it under the new standard, which makes it cross-compatible with Alexa and Apple Home as well, allowing freedom to change ecosystems along the way if you like. Coming up next, Derek has a question. Work is installing many different software packages, and I'm overwhelmed. We'll address that next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Derek reached out to me. You can do it too. Go to ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says contact us today and I will answer your computer questions and address your technology concerns. Derek's question, my company just rolled out a dozen new productivity tools, smart dashboards, and AI assistants. Shouldn't all this tech be making work easier? And I sit here and I think about some of the knives that I have. Hang with me here. Some of the knives that I've had in my pockets over the many years of my life, of my career, and so forth. And today I have a very basic, simple, it's just one blade. It doesn't have all of these, you know, the Swiss Army Knife Company, they've got one that has like 100 different tools on it. And they brag about, we've got the one that's got the most tools out there or whatever. And I think it's Victorinox. It's Victorinox or Wenger. It doesn't matter. And look, it sounds great to have all of these tools. But most of us aren't going to use all of these tools every day. And really, instead of making things simpler, we've all of a sudden got all kinds of different things like the corkscrew, the magnifying glass, the mini saw, and all you want to do is you just want to cut a zip tie. You know, this is kind of rough, and that is what is happening in workplace tech today. And I will tell people, if they're asking me, more isn't always better. You have to think about efficiency. Too many tools create digital chaos and move us away from that efficiency. Every single one of these tools, as Derek knows, requires onboarding, requires maintenance. It requires constant switching back and forth between different things, and it slows down real work. Especially when some of these tools start overlapping and we start to gain a bit of confusion. Right now, I'm happy with what my company has. We have two different ways that we reach out to people. We can reach out to them via email or we can reach out to them via Teams. But there are a number of different companies out there. I've seen companies which have Slack and Teams and Zoom and email and all of these other things. And they just start racking up. And it's like, okay, which one am I needing to check now? And productivity fatigue is going to start to kick in when you spend more time navigating tools than actually working. So everything should be there for a reason. Every different tool that we have needs to be there to exist to make us more efficient. Efficiency is going to be a very key theme throughout all of this. We need to be empowered to do our job, not to be thrown 100 different things that all do very similar things to others. I recently talked about PowerPoint and how they're removing PowerPoint from Microsoft Office. They do make reference to, well, we've got a number of other programs that actually already do this. They do it fairly well. They don't do it as well as, not PowerPoint, Publisher. But at the same time, a lot of people aren't using Publisher anymore. So, yeah, there's a lot there. We do wind up with a lot more of these tools showing up, too, that put us into this 24/7 connectivity trap, which I think a lot of us are starting to really rethink. And we're starting to say, well, wait a second. I signed on to work for a period of time. I signed on for occasional overtime, occasional on call, but not to be at the beck and call of everybody who thinks that I need to solve their problem 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And with a lot of these different productivity tools, we are seeing more notifications, more pings, and that expectation that you are always there. And those remote work tools are blurring the line between work and personal life. Just because you can check messages at 11 o'clock at night doesn't mean you should. I am hoping that some of these AI tools, some of these different automation tools that are coming along will actually allow us to streamline instead of leading to higher expectations and more work being assigned. And then we move into this endless optimization that that a lot of companies talk about, but there's a certain level of that being a myth. Companies roll out new tech all the time, and they talk about increased efficiency. But I will tell you, I feel your pain. The constant changes do create stress and frustration. They also generate learning curves. If a new tool saves 10 minutes a day, but it takes weeks to master it, is it really worth it? So we need to be very careful, all of us, with this. And I'm not saying that we all need to be pushing back from the user level all the way on up to management, but we need to be having these discussions everywhere. And along the way, I know that a lot of companies are pushing for data analysis and dashboards. And all of these dashboards need to be considered very carefully. We need to be evaluating the information that is being returned to us from whatever data source that it is. And we need to be making sure that we are hitting the key spots. The place I work right now, we do have a focus on that. But I have seen where companies are putting out all kinds of different dashboards, and they've got 100 different numbers that they're throwing up on the screen, and maybe 5 of them are truly valuable. So we all need to be rethinking that. If you're creating dashboards, if you're involved with that, you need to be evaluating, is this dashboard, is this data set, is this evaluation truly needed to better the company? So I will tell you that in defense of all of us, we need to be considering that mental load and burnout are real. And shifting back and forth between a lot of different apps can exhaust your cognitive energy. It can reduce your focus, and it can add so much stress there. That pressure to keep up with the latest tech is sometimes just overwhelming, and we need to be thinking about all of these workflows. We need to be thinking about simplifying everything. again, going back to that efficiency thing. And I want to end up with a little bit of advice for Derek, but everybody who's listening in on this. We need to be thinking about how to break free from that more tech trap that we are all driving towards. We do need to be pushing back on unnecessary tools. If it's not solving a real problem, why do we have it? Why use it? We need to be consolidating wherever we can. Fewer platforms means less mental overhead. And yes, we do need to be thinking about setting boundaries because, yes, I've got a number of pop-ups that happen throughout the day, throughout the night. I've got a number of different alerts that happen, and that's part of what my job is. But we need to be making sure that we do have a certain set of boundaries, that we are muting notifications, we are scheduling focused work time, and we do all need to resist the urge to check in after hours. Look, tech is really supposed to be here to make our lives easier, our work easier. But when more tools create more stress, it's time to think through the strategy. Instead of chasing every new platform, focus on what makes life actually simpler. Because real productivity isn't about the number of apps that you use. It's about getting things done without drowning in digital noise. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. And by the way, we are in the middle of an occasional series, so we're not doing this every week, but every couple of weeks or so, we're sprinkling in a little bit more on this series in regards to backups on the Mac, backups in general. Time Machine is included in there and so much more. And Keith McDonald joins me now to talk about this. Now, Keith, we've gone through and you were experiencing a lot of really good luck with the Airport series, with Time Capsule and all of that. And then somewhere along the way, the rug was pulled out from underneath your feet.
Yeah, and that really is the best way to put it, Benjamin, because it wasn't, I can't even say I was having some success with it. Benjamin, this was the holy grail of Mac wireless networking coupled with Mac backup. It was literally the best solution I'd ever seen. Now, you have to understand, these were Steve Jobs era products because Steve passed in 2011 and this was introduced in early 2008 and was developed through mid 2013. So by the time Steve passed, they were already on their fourth iteration of Time Machine, of Time Capsule and Airport Extreme and Airport Express products. And they really were staying on the cutting edge, because the earliest ones had 802.11a and b, and then later added g, and then later n, and then the final one before they were ultimately discontinued actually had 802.11ac. Okay. Which was the draft specification, just to be clear, in full transparency, but it worked very, very well. In fact, I actually have one that still works, and it is my primary wireless router to this day, even though it was discontinued in 2018. But it's important to note that Apple's internal team for development of the AirPort routers and time capsule was disbanded in 2016, and they kept the devices in production for another 2 years after that, and then were discontinued in 2018.
When was the last version of the unit? Was it in 13 or was it in 16 or
it was somewhere in between? It was in the middle of 2013 is when the fifth generation AirPort time capsule.
So they held on to those guys for a couple of years there, and
they did.
didn't do anything with it.
Bumped up the capacity of the time capsule to 2 and 3 terabytes respectively, and you could get one at its highest capacity for only $399, and it was fast and it was reliable, and it was literally one of the greatest products Apple has ever made. In fact, you've heard me say on numerous occasions that I am absolutely in love with two technologies that Apple's come out with. One of them is the MagSafe power connector that connects with a rare earth magnet to the laptops for the power adapter. And the other is Time Machine, but specifically the Time Machine software and companion hardware time capsule as a full and complete solution for wireless networking and backup for the Mac laptops.
I remember way back then, you and I had, I think we spent a couple of weeks lamenting the loss of that product.
Well, I mean, the reality of it is, Benjamin, is that it wasn't just the loss of the product. It was the loss of a solution, not just for myself, but for my current clients and new clients going forward. So that was going to require me to do a lot of research, because I couldn't just arbitrarily go, oh, let's just get a different router. Because most companies weren't selling a router hard drive combination device that would be compatible with Apple's Time Machine software. Time Capsule was designed as an integrated, handshaked partner product with the Time Machine software built into every Mac. And so I probably spent the better part of the next year plus examining and looking at solutions from a lot of different companies. Like, there was the Google-created Orbi routers, if you remember those. Then they were supposed to be pretty good. And there was another one that whose name is eluding me at the moment. But ultimately, the one I wound up going with, Benjamin, was a company called Eero, E-E-R-O.
Yeah. I didn't know they had a hard drive product. I thought it was just the
mesh. They don't. It's a mesh networking product. But to that end, the one half of the problem that still needed to be addressed was the fact that Mac laptops would need a wireless network. And Eero was so great as a networking product that on the rare occasion I needed some port from them, their tech support online, unlike a lot of other tech support, which would wind up in call centers in who knows where, their support was as good as Apple's. And I only needed to use it like once or twice. Once was there was a technical problem. Once was just a couple of questions. But Apple, having said, you know, we're not doing this anymore, left the field open for others. I am happy I went with Eero. And to that end, beyond being an Apple certified consultant, I am now also an Eero Pro certified installer.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. So I actually have partnered with Eero. And while I'm not, I don't get any programs or anything to give me discounts or anything, I do have preferred access as a technical person when I need to get in touch with them for any issues, although I rarely ever do because their products are so good.
There we go. So there's our full disclosure for anybody who wants to know. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number is 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. That's how you can reach out to me. You can ask me questions. I will, if they're for some of the other folks here, I will pass them along, of course. If I don't answer, by the way, leave a message. I will get back with you. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Ah, this is one of the most interesting lights that I've seen in a long time.
Lights, okay.
In studio land, there's a thing called a big soft. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. But then soft. I went to college for radio and television broadcasting, so yeah.
Did you finish?
I plead the fifth.
You plead the fifth?
Yeah.
I think I emptied one. That was my college. A big soft is a light that initially had a tent behind it and kind of a puffy white thing in the front. Mm-hmm. So whatever light you put in there was totally diffused. It had no single point of origin. So the light that it cast was like the light you get from a cloud. Mm-hmm. It's very even. It's very flattering. It does not have the shadows that are usually created. So wrinkles kind of soften and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, Brightline Lighting has a light called Zello, Z-E-L-O. Okay. Only one L. I know you're going to want to say Jello or Hello or something. It's only one L, Z-E-L-O.
Yeah.
They call it a desktop studio light. It can be, but I have to tell you, I've tried this thing. It is like you squeeze a big soft light into the size of a sub sandwich.
Okay.
Really good lighting. If you're doing Teams or Zoom or that kind of thing, you've never looked that good on camera. Mm-hmm. Now, these could be a boon to tons of people for a lot of different activities. I mean, you ought to see how well they're built. Of course, Zello, if you look up the word, means impassioned ardor. Woohoo! Like zealot. I mean, okay. It's from the same root. The original purpose of these was for those remote connected broadcasts during and after the pandemic. You know, have an expert who's going to, and it always looks like a library, but the fire never moves. You've seen those things.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they thought, okay, we'll plug them in. We'll put one on each side of their notebook and one up higher, and we'll have great light. And they did, but they didn't need all of those because big softs, you only need one and it's over the top and you're done. You can put it on both sides if you want to dimensionalize the face a little more, but without shadows, you're not gaining that much. You're just having a brighter face. So
sure.
Here's this flexible light. When it originally came out, it was about $250 each.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do things with it at a coffee table that you couldn't make happen in a remote studio without a lot more money in those days. So
yeah.
They got kind of popular in broadcast and professional studios and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's for us, too. If you're on Zoom or Teams meetings, mm-hmm, it's terrific. Yeah. If you're just taking snapshots of the dog or the family or that food on the plate,
mm-hmm,
everything gets kind of that photo studio treatment.
Yes, yeah. As a matter of fact, the soft light that you're talking about, a lot of people have seen them the last time they went to a professional photographer.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, this thing it comes with a base plate, so you're not going to rock it. It's mm-hmm got a control pod at the bottom where you can slide the color temperature mm-hmm between mm-hmm the almost amber candlelight, 2700 degree, really warm temperature, all the way up to full sunlight, 6500 Kelvin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's very useful. It's got a color rendering index, meaning how faithful is the color, yeah, of over 96.
That's some quality LEDs there. Okay, yeah.
And for all of that, it's 1,300 lumens, which is just in the range of equivalent of a 100-watt bulb.
Yeah, that's good.
So your eyes aren't going to want to retreat just because the thing's on. It's very friendly. Now, I love 4,100 because all of the colors are natural at 4,100 Kelvin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're wearing makeup or you're judging the color of a fabric or any of that thing, mm-hmm, you can go either way if you want to, but for putting on makeup, for presenting jewelry, for looking at clothing, for previewing what's in the closet that you're going to wear tonight, I would put this right there. This light, this big soft light that is flattering but covers everything like a paint gun. I mean, this thing is terrific. So if you're coloring your hair or nails, you're selecting jewelry or furniture or carpeting, mm-hmm, taking mm-hmm photos of pets or kids, a lot of things, this is a color faithful view. Now, to add to that, it's made in the USA. What's the tariff on that, everybody?
That's really good. Yeah.
By Brightline Lighting. And you can right now I said it was $250, and these days it's about $160 at brightlines.com.
Very cool. We have under a minute left, but what could you say to get people to really hit home, to really care about the color of lighting? I've struggled over the years trying to explain that.
Oh, I've been able to show people that what looks like a brown sweater may change to orange or green, depending mm-hmm on the light and depending on the fabric. I can show you how the blush on your cheek that looked like it was a great fit at candlelight temperatures looks like you went through a spray and wash. skin tones, fabric tones, those are the number one reason to get those things right. And if you're looking at a photo with the kids, if the kid's got blue eyes or brown eyes and mm-hmm you're adjusting that photo for the tint on the skin under the wrong light, your eyes will turn the wrong color. So getting it right, that's why you choose the right color temperature of light.
Very cool. That's Brady Winston. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. the bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. Every season, throughout the year, there are various scams that they will try. At Christmas time, they try the scams that will get you to buy various alluring toys for the kids. When we start moving through to football season, yes, they'll sell things like that. We move into tax season, and we get something like this one. I got a text, and it was from the State of California Franchise Tax Board. A text message from them? That's kind of weird. Your California tax refund of $1,050 will permanently expire on, and it gives a date, and it's 2 days away. Failure to submit the required documentation by the deadline will result in the forfeiture of your payment to the State of California. To prevent unnecessary loss, please address this matter promptly. And then it gives a link, and it says California Tax Franchise Tax Board, Sacramento, California Official State Agency. There are all kinds of warnings on this. The fact that it is just a matter of 2 days away. The fact that I might lose $1,000, and that's always an alarming thing for everyone. The idea, though, that it is coming from the California Franchise Tax Board, which is a legitimate agency, and yet the sender phone number that sent this text was in a 407 area code. Florida, the state of Florida. Why would the state of California send me something from Florida? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Of course, all of these different encouragements to act right away, to give me money that I wasn't expecting, especially since I owe the state of California a bit in taxes, and I pay them every year. This is just, you know, part of tax season. So this is clearly one of those different messages that we can all ignore. But we need to be aware of this. We need to be on our toes. We need to be thinking about every single aspect of how they are reaching out to us. They give a website for me to click through, and the website is clearly not from the state of California. It is ending in, the extension is .top, and I, off the top of my head, I don't know where that is, but it doesn't matter. It's just a matter of how it's all occurring. It's how it's all progressing through. These bad guys are going to try anything to get your attention. They're going to try anything to get you to click through. And they give instructions to encourage me to click through. And they give me that dire warning that I might lose money if I don't act right away. That urgency. All of these things should be warning signs to you. All of these different elements are key things that we all need to be watching for, we need to be prepared for, and we need to be ready to just delete it, to just move on with the rest of our day and forget about that scammer and be prepared for the next one that's going to come along in just a couple more days. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
your mouse is dead and the computer is on life support, Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
This is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact your life, my life, all of our lives. And we do welcome your questions, your technology concerns. You can reach out to us at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can check out the podcast there as well. You can also phone us at 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. Steve Keske joins me now, and Steve, you were mentioning something in regards to prosthetics from DARPA, and I said, we've got to record this. So let's talk about this. What are they doing?
Well, DARPA and private industry, people that work with prosthetics.
We should actually open up by saying what DARPA is. I'm remiss there.
I can't remember them all.
Defense Advanced Research Project Agency.
Agency.
Yeah. Is something like that.
Anyway.
Yeah.
They decided to allocate $100 million to this project.
Okay. that's a chunk of change.
That's a chunk of change. Anyway, the whole idea was that to upgrade and update prosthetics.
Okay.
Predominantly in arms and hands.
Okay.
Because from the 1950s onward, you know, your basic prosthetic was a hook.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And they have been doing more and more advances, but this one here was a big push.
So I have seen them, and I will defend this kind of concept in that a lot of the soldiers that we've got coming back from various conflicts or even non-conflicts. The injuries that are sustained in our military frequently have to do with hands and arms and feet and legs. So
that's it.
It's very important that we do whatever we can to help restore some semblance of
normality
in their lives. Yes, exactly.
And this particular one that I was researching, they have defined it down to where this particular arm and hand, the test subject that was working on with DARPA reached over and picked up a grape off a table and ate the grape without squishing it.
Okay.
Which means the sensors have been defined so, shall we say, accurately.
Sure.
That gives you the sensitivity that you and I would have in our normal fingers.
So I'm wondering if there's a certain level with the sensors or actually perhaps some additional level of control by the person wearing the prosthetic.
Yeah.
Where they can control and say, okay, I recognize that's a grape, and I can think in my brain moving, you know, I don't understand fully how the various non-brain connected prosthetics work. I think it has something to do with various muscle complexes within our arms and so forth.
Well, but I just say, you know, go ahead and pick up something in your hand and just move your hand and think of all those muscles that you are using just to do that one simple motion.
Sure, yeah.
You know? And it really would amaze people to think of how many muscles there are. For instance, just to take a step, the normal human being does approximately 1 million computations to take one step.
Sure.
In
yeah.
your brain. So how many, hey, you got to get very, very sensitive stuff going here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not going to stop with this. Not one of the biggest things that people with prosthetics,
mm-hmm.
arm, leg, whatever, they complain because the prosthetic is rubbing on the end of the arm or
sure. leg. Yeah.
And I knew a person personally who always had that problem.
Mm-hmm.
They are now working with alternative ways of making that connection so that there's, shall we say, almost like an air pocket around the arm so that or leg so that now you have a cushion and yet when you move, the prosthetic will move, but it won't necessarily rub.
Yeah.
Against. So they're working on that. And one of the other really, to me, mystifying ones is they are, if I was to say, okay, I want to move my thumb.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Now, way up here in my shoulder
mm-hmm.
is a set of nerves
mm-hmm.
that control or actually communicate with my thumb to say, hey, I want you to, you know, move.
Mm-hmm.
And they are finding that those, even if a person who has lost their arm thinks about moving a thumb,
mm-hmm.
those nerves are actually activated.
Yeah.
So now they want to figure out how to connect the artificial arm to those nerves.
Yeah.
Which to me is, oh, yeah. That would be great.
You know, and the way you talk about that, it reminds me of, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, from memory, it's a Leonardo da Vinci sculpture, and he was so exacting, so very aware of our musculature that it's something about how like the pinky, if it's closed in or extended out as opposed to the rest of them, it moves this muscle that is up in the upper arm. And it makes this little indentation. And I don't remember enough of this to speak authoritatively on it, but there are things like that that we don't think about.
That's right. I think that you're referring to the Statue of David. I believe, you know, that's the one, because that statue, I've seen pictures, that is something else.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but to stop and think about, you know, we as human beings have that opposable thumb,
mm-hmm.
and we don't really think about it.
Yeah.
And how wonderful it is on being able to pick things up.
Sure.
And do a lot of other stuff. One of the next things in the sensoring mm-hmm. that they're also talking about is sensing heat and cold.
Okay, yeah.
Not just because of how it's going to involve the prosthetic itself,
mm-hmm.
but because you don't want to put a prosthetic in a fire.
No, you don't. There are certain things that we rely upon, and the sense of heat and cold is a very key thing. And to restore that, especially as we look at the idea of prosthetics being 3D printed, they are essentially built out of plastic, and it doesn't take a whole lot of heat to start to destroy that. That would be very key to have something like that.
I looked at a picture of this prosthetic that I was looking at, yeah. and there is the parts are can be 3D printed.
Yeah.
But the overall arm is so articulated
mm-hmm.
and has so many movable parts.
Mm-hmm.
That it becomes Yeah, that's a really high class and high tech piece of equipment here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. We're going to be watching this, of course, seeing how this all unfolds. The idea of everything in our world is shifting so much because of technology. And whether we're talking about prosthetics, we're talking about the quote-unquote bionic arms and legs, but also eyes and so much more. There's a lot of capabilities that are coming along now. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That is Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Let's talk about space. But first, the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. You can ask your questions. You can have me address your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Again, computertalkradio.com. Space is the final frontier, just as the TV show says. And it's been a long time since we set foot on the moon. And we are going there sometime in the next couple of years. But I believe we need to be keeping our sights on a far more distant horizon, that of Mars. And I get into this conversation every once in a while with people. And I really start to think back to a lot of my youth, my childhood, my fascination there with both science fiction, but science fact. I remember watching my first launch of the space shuttle. Yeah, I remember watching this on TV, and I was so fascinated by it. I think it was the very first launch, and there was just the roar of the engines, the billowing smoke. It was like a door swinging open to the cosmos. That moment really kicked off a lot of my lifelong curiosity about space from the fact point of view. As a teenager, I was just like many of my other peers. I thought about how cool it would be to be an astronaut. I mean, I watched Star Trek, so there was that side of it. But even just the idea of watching Earth shrink into a distant blue marble, like the picture that we're so familiar with, was exciting to me. My life, of course, went in a different direction, but my hunger for discovery, for our planet, for humanity, has never faded. Today, as we have people starting to talk about Mars as our next destination, I find myself continuing to be just as captivated, just as fascinated by this entire concept. Mars is, of course, we know that is the red planet. It's a harsh frontier, but it's also a necessary frontier. I mean, it's no paradise. It is truly a barren wasteland. It has a very thin atmosphere. It has a distinct increase in the amount of radiation. We've seen glimmers and little minor proofs that there is water there, but not enough for us to truly survive yet. But survival is a battle. It is just something to get past. This is not an impossible task. If we are serious about a human presence on Mars, we need to tackle a lot of key challenges. Yes, we've got a lot colder of temperatures there on Mars. We do have the radiation. We do have the thin atmosphere. But we can combat all of that by developing advanced habitats, sustainable life support systems. We need to be doing research on a lot more than just how to get there, but how can we survive there? And I think that's why it's so important that we have the Mars rover out there. We've sent these different fact-finding missions across space out to Mars. We also need to be looking at a number of other things here. We need to be looking at the idea of the months of interplanetary travel, followed by what is going to be a bit of an isolation. That could be quite a heavy toll, a psychological toll on our astronauts. And we need to be figuring out, how do we address that? How do we conquer that? Future trips to Mars are going to wind up with us having Martians, not in the, you know, Marvin the Martian concept, but overall, we are going to have people who will become citizens of Mars, and they must not only survive, but they must thrive there. So we have to figure out all of these different things. We can't just haul everything from Earth. I mean, that's just impractical. We have to figure out all of the different resources, and we do have people that are starting to look into this. But we need to make this a bigger mission than just the little bit of talking about and going, oh, hey, it would be cool to go to Mars someday. We do have biological unknowns. We don't know what's out there. Mars gravity is some 40% of Earth's. So we need to figure out the long-term effects on human health. We don't know what that is yet. The longest we've had an astronaut in space is a little bit over a year, and that's zero gravity. But we're talking about not really a microgravity, but we are talking about a distinct reduction. So we need to be finding out what we need to do there. Yes, some of the astronauts we've sent, we've given them ways to exercise and all of that. But we've got to be starting to plan this out. We need to figure this out. Of course, people say, why should we go there? I will tell you, despite all of these challenges that I've just laid out, the rewards are undeniable. Staying confined to Earth is actually a bigger risk. We need to figure out what we're doing for the long term as humanity. There's the idea. I mean, we just had the threat of an asteroid coming around. It's going around the sun. It's going to come on back. Well, they said now it's not going to hit us, but it's going to hit the moon. Okay, whatever. But we have to think about other potential disasters. Maybe it's self-inflicted. Maybe it is, you know, the oft talked about climate change, and I'm not talking about necessarily man-made climate change. I'm just talking about overall. We don't know what's going to happen over the course of the coming years, decades, centuries. Mars actually does offer a backup for us. We do need to think about what is up there. And we need to think about also, what can we gain from that trip to Mars? We have all kinds of different things that came out of the Apollo program, that came out of us going to space, that came out of us going up in and going into the International Space Station. These have been catalysts for innovation all the way along. And I'll tell you, just as the Apollo missions led to revolutionary technologies, Mars is going to drive even deeper, wider breakthroughs in engineering, medicine, and sustainability. We will have all kinds of different new things that will come out of investing in something like this. I also think of this, not just about science, but about purpose. So if you've listened to me for a while, you know that I believe in God. I believe in a creator. I believe in something else that God created us with, and that is curiosity. If God gave us the capacity to explore, isn't it our duty to do exactly that, to explore the planet out there, Mars, may just be an invitation to reach beyond what we know, to discover even more things. So this is a big, huge leap. It's the next great leap that we are going to make. And Mars colonization is not a solo endeavor. It will require a lot more collaboration, not just governments, but private companies, public support. This is not a far-fetched fantasy, but a necessary next step for us. Krista McAuliffe, she was on the Space Shuttle Challenger, or she was scheduled to go to space until the accident. But she said, space is for everybody. That's our new frontier out there, and it's everybody's business. She was right about that. Mars isn't just for the few. It is not for all of us in the sense of us listening. It is for future generations. It is for humanity itself. We are explorers at heart, and we are meant to push beyond the horizon in front of us. The greatest chapters of our story are yet to be written. My biggest question is, are we ready to turn the page? Are we ready to invest in this? And I think we are. I think this is the time for us to really think about that next great leap. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. I want to encourage you, reach out to me with your technology concerns, your computer questions. I am here to answer them. I really enjoy communicating with the listeners, so feel free to reach out. Now, for this next topic, I want to take you back in time. I want to take you back to an experience I had probably 30-ish years ago. My car got broken into, and that was kind of a shocking experience. And out of that, they stole the stereo in my car. And like many people have done over the years, when something like this happens, I replaced my stereo. I put in a brand new stereo. And this is something that we've been able to do for so long. We have been going through and retrofitting our vehicles, our cars, for decades. And this includes replacing stereos, replacing speakers, going through, and people have gone through and upgraded their engines. They've upgraded their wheels and tires and so forth. So I want to set this up. I want to use this as a setup, basically, for this kind of experience that's going on right now. And I want to take you back 2 years ago when General Motors announced a very controversial item. They said, we're going to drop Apple CarPlay support from our electric vehicles. We're going to drop Android Auto. We're just not going to deal with it anymore. We want to roll out our new Altify infotainment software. And that was kind of a disheartening thought for a lot of people, because we've been going in that direction. And there are a couple of other companies that have come along and said, hey, we're going to drop Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. We think we can do it better, which is kind of funny because Apple and Android, both of those are aiming at all of the car markets. They're aiming at all of the different vehicles out there and the interoperability there amongst all of them. And the hubris of somebody like General Motors to come along and say, oh, we think we can do it better, is absolutely amazing. I'm dumbfounded whenever I think about this. And I talked about that back then. We fast forward to a little bit more recently, and someone came along and came out with a retrofit kit. This was last November, and there was one General Motors dealer that was on board to offer installations of this. Now, this is something that is a little bit more advanced than the folks over at Best Buy or your local car stereo shop can achieve. So it did require a professional installation for this. So they had to have some GM dealer on board to do this. And it was a company called White Automotive that stepped forward and said, hey, we got the solution. All you got to do is send it on over to this particular dealer. They'll take care of it. They'll pull out whatever it is they need to pull out, and they'll put in whatever they need to put in. You know, it's still the same kind of concept. You're still replacing the guts of whatever system that is there and putting in a brand new system. But GM this week stepped in and said, yeah, we don't think so. We're going to shut down this entire idea. And yeah, White Automotive all of a sudden stopped promoting this product without any explanation whatsoever. And part of this comes from General Motors going forward. And according to the news article, they investigated the retrofit and they said, well, it could have adverse impacts on critical vehicle functions. And I raise an eyebrow at this, because so many different claims can be made about what it's doing and what it's not doing. And this all comes under the veil of what they have hidden away, what both sides have hidden away as far as how to accomplish this entire thing. General Motors went to that one dealer that was on board that said, hey, we're going to do it. And they said, basically, you've got to drop this partnership with White Automotive. And this is kind of a rough thing. White Automotive apparently has gone forward and they've said, well, we had one dealer on board. We thought we could do this. We can't. GM, they did have a statement on this. Aftermarket services that introduce features not originally designed, thoroughly tested, and approved by General Motors may cause unintended issues for customers. These issues could affect critical safety features and may also void portions of the vehicle's warranty. It's kind of a slap in the face to all of us here. You may not see it like that, but we've gone forward for so long. We've tried so hard to customize our cars in the way we want them to be. There are so many people out there that get a paint job, or they'll get a vinyl wrap on their car, and they will make their whatever car that they have that seems to be very run-of-the-mill into something very unique. I saw a Tesla the other day, and it was in a very, very nice multicolor wrap, and it was beautiful. That owner had made this very plain-looking car into something that represented them, that represented something of their personality. Look, I will say that it was very interesting that one of their dealerships said, hey, we're willing to buck the system. We're willing to fight back, and we're willing to help people achieve what they want, which is, of course, what everybody has in all of the other cars, Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. They were willing to risk a lot with General Motors, and yet they also were told to stand down, and that kind of undid everything. And I think that represents an unfortunate demise of just one little section of where we might make our vehicle, our car, truly ours. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting, archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of what's going on. And I'm in the middle of this series. This is the fourth one in the series in regards to the whole idea that we need to return to office. A lot of us have been working via remote for 5 years. We came across this through COVID, and IT enabled us to do remote work, become digital nomads, and to really start working with people in other countries and build teams that are scattered across, not just across the city, across the state, but across the country and around the world. And that's all because of technology. This is something we couldn't do a matter of 30 years ago. But now we've got the ability to do that. And I will tell you that, yes, there are employers that are throwing different ideas out that say we need to go back into the office. One of the ones that I heard that doesn't really ring true to me, especially since I've been a part of security, and it says that security requires office work. I'll tell you, I worked for an aerospace subcontractor, and we had a lot of security concerns, and we would try to address them on a regular basis. I had one particular worker who could not remember his password, a very simple password, a very easy password. So what did he do? He put his password on a post-it note. And he would hide it around after a little while, after I continued to just get on his case. But it still was a matter, if you've sat at his desk for more than 3 minutes, you were going to find that post-it note. Yes, it was under his keyboard. It was on the back side of his monitor. It was underneath his phone. And he moved the location every once in a while. Usually when I said, hey, I found your post-it note, security is one of those things that they talk about, but the reality is security, you're not going to have a whole lot of control over security without changing what people are doing. It's not a matter of bringing them all into the office. That's a horrible idea. You're not going to beat security by bringing them all into the office and then forgetting to train them without, you have to sit them down. You have to show them how to be better with security. And that can be done. I'll tell you, I've worked at a few different companies now where all of my security training took place, not in person, but by sitting and watching a video. And it told me, for me, it told me a bunch of things I already know. Don't put your password on post-it notes. Don't share information with people who aren't supposed to have that information. And things like that. Even still, it was probably really basic security learnings. Over the course of the last, 10 different videos I've seen on this, because, you know, you get refresher videos and stuff like that, I didn't learn anything new. And nothing new came out of them. And that's partially from where I'm at, but it's also partially from the idea that we're still not building security as a culture, as a concept in the minds of people. We still have people who post on Facebook all kinds of different personal, private things that they really should never have posted. So I'll tell you, security concerns, they don't require being in the office. And I'll tell you, if you are concerned about security, about the security of your data and all of the different information that's on your servers, and you're concerned that the person who's working remote may be able to steal that information or share it or somehow break down your security protocols, I'll tell you something. It's not about their location, because they'll hide it just as much in the office as they would via remote. They're still going to do it. You need to figure out the person, not the location. The next item on my list here is the idea that onboarding needs to be in person. And I struggle with this one because I've gone into companies where the whole onboarding process was, here's a bunch of paperwork, fill it out. Okay, you're onboarded. Okay, maybe a little bit more than that. You spend a matter of a few hours talking to someone who says, this is how we do this particular project. This is how we do this particular set of operational tasks. This is what we do here. This is what we do there. And you're onboarded. In many cases, onboarding is just trial by fire. And it doesn't matter whether you're in the office or not. If everybody has to be in the office to be onboarded, Then do that, but then don't require them to be onboarded and then in the office and then just make them stay in the office, because the onboarding is over. It's all done with. If your company is relying upon the new workers getting their information because they're sitting next to someone rather than through some level of structured training, that is not a work problem. That is a problem with the company, the training, or perhaps those who are being trained. And those are the areas which you improve upon. Like, there's so many different things, and I could go for weeks on end. And I'm going to wrap this up right now, because I've got a number of different lists here. I've got multiple people who've reached out to me through the radio show here, and they've said, hey, have you thought about this? What do you think about that? And I'll tell you, I could go on for a long time, but I want to wrap it up with this. The idea of returning to office for some may be good. For some out there, it's going to be a must-have. But for a lot of people who can be productive, who can be more productive in their own home, in their own home office, the whole idea of making everybody across the board return to office as a mandate doesn't make as much sense to me, and probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to a lot of people out there. We need to be thinking about this all the way along, together, as teams, as partners in the company. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, SiteGround.com. .com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Cindy reached out to me with a question. Are smart home devices vulnerable to hackers? And the answer is pretty simple. Anything with a chip is vulnerable, is susceptible, is definitely there for a hacker to take control of. The fear of this is very valid as technology becomes increasingly driven into our daily lives. But should we fear it? I don't know that we need to fear it. And the reason for this is because a lot of these different things are isolated away. Yeah, I've got a bunch of smart light switches in the house, a lot of them. And I can sit here and I can think about all of those and I can worry about those, but they aren't capable enough for handling a whole lot of hacking or rehacking, of adding in all kinds of malicious code that will eventually travel around to all of my light switches and make them blink on and off in an uncontrolled manner. The reality is, yes, somebody could probably hack into it and they could be able to turn on one of my lights, turn off another light. But the reality is they're not interested in that. Hackers are really the bad guys, the deepest of the bad guys. They're interested in money. They're interested in things like ransomware, where they throw something on your computer, they encrypt it, and then they get a matter of $500, $1,000, $5,000 from us as we give up and we go, no, I can't handle it. You can keep ahead of this. You can make sure that your smart devices are updated with the latest in security patches and firmware. You can set up passwords for a lot of these different things. You can also go through and you can set up a separate network for your smart home devices, which isolates them from the rest of the network. And that's actually very much an ideal thing, both for the security aspect, but also if you're capable of doing this, if your smart devices allow for it and you've got the technology know-how to continue forward with setting up that separate network, it actually frees up space a little bit because they're really low profile items, but it frees up just that little bit of space for a lot more of your other traffic to travel across. Look, I'm going to tell you, across everything that we have, all of the technology within your home and so forth, you do need to be going through and you need to be reviewing all of the different security settings, all of the different firmware items, and you need to be updating them. You need to think about features like network monitoring and perhaps some intrusion detection, but a lot of these different features are located right on your router. Just as we take precautions to secure our homes with alarms, locks, and surveillance systems, we can implement a lot of different security measures to safeguard our smart homes and really minimize the risk of any of these bad guys coming along and turning off your lights when you least expect it. It's actually quite easy. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.